Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. This is the show where we seek answers to questions large and small, and sometimes just plain fun. Thank you for joining us. We're here every Tuesday at noon and again Fridays at 6 p.m. Today I have with me the former manager of Vashon Island's Farmers Market and the former unofficial mayor of Vashon Island. He is Caleb Johns. Welcome, Caleb.
Thank you, Susan. I'm really happy to be here.
So my first question to you is, how does it feel to have your office succeeded by a dog?
I worked and campaigned really hard to maintain the human independence of the mayor's position here on Vashon. I don't know if anyone recalls, but I had a very stiff competitor in the canine variety when I was running. So it's but all the best to Goliath, and I hope he enjoys his time.
Yeah, and just to remind folks, your competitor at the time was deaf, blind, and a tripod.
Correct. He had the disability vote. He had the blind vote. He had the canine vote. He was a stiff competition.
And nonetheless, you won. And you declared Voice of Vashon's official birthday.
We did. That was a lovely time.
In October. Yes, that's right. And now you are the founder and CEO of an organization called Farmify.
I am. This is my newest venture. And I am really excited to be here to share a little bit about it with you. It's my new company whose mission is to increase the local production and local consumption of agricultural products through the mindful use of technology.
What exactly does that mean, and how did you come to this?
That's a good question. Through my own personal journey, have really come to believe that a powerful and vibrant local agricultural scene is really important for our community, for our sense of community, for our health, for our connection to food, for our diet, for our economic stability. The agriculture sector has long been seen as a backbone of a strong economy, and seeing small towns struggle, really one of the ways that the ones that are still going strong are succeeding is when they have a good, strong economic backbone of local agriculture. And so that's kind of the macro picture, comes from my dreams of what looking at big pictures of how the systems work around me. But also in my personal life, my wife and I have found great value to our personal health, some of her health challenges through quality food and changing our diet, and wouldn't be able to do that without living here on Vashon, where we do have such a vibrant, strong local agricultural economy.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, because as the former manager of Vashon Farmers Market, you probably had a really good close-up view of how our small farmers are doing. How are they doing?
Well, they're amazing. And they're an amazing group of individuals doing some of the most, I think, profoundly important work. And it's not easy work. And as an island, at least in the spectrum of locations around the nation, we support them quite well. But we could support them more. And I would like to see ways that could happen with ease. Ways that we could have even more vibrance and even more success on the part of both the farmers and the businesses that wish to engage with them and the individuals who wish to buy from them. Vashon's such a special place, and we all know this. That's why we're here, and why we have a radio station all to ourselves. I mean, it's amazing. But there are challenges. There are definitely challenges that farmers deal with, figuring out how to succeed and figuring out how to know what crops to grow for who and how to sell them correctly and how to figure out how to grow demand. It's a lot of work.
How can you give us a sense of how many of our local farmers are actually making a living with their farms? And if there are folks doing that, what are their secrets to success?
making living is, let's parse that just a little bit. Uh-huh. There are quite a few people on this island who have some significant portion of their sustenance coming through farming. I don't know that there is very many, if any, and I don't know that I could be the authoritative mm-hmm. one on this, but this is my sense, that don't have any other forms of resources coming into their families in one form or another. You know, so there's very much in the Vashon way, and also in the way of many small farms across the nation. This is a story that's not just our story.
Yeah.
There are necessities in place right now that require small farms, small family farms, to have other forms of income, other forms of resourcing, so that they can survive, so that they can have the means and the tools and the things that they need to sustain a family, to have healthcare, to do the things that they want. That can be functional. There are quite a few families, quite a few people on this island who have found ways that they can both be very successful farmers, as well as doing a little bit of this or a little bit of that, or some member of their family doing something else that creates a life that they're really happy with and they really get what they want. And that's wonderful. But I would love to see farming be a little bit easier, a little bit more successful, a little bit more profitable. Farmers from their farming side don't live on very much. You know, they're making do on a lot less than most of us.
Yeah. And would you say that that's true not only of Vashon Island farmers, but of small farmers nationwide? So,
absolutely.
What from your research would make it possible for small farmers to actually make it, particularly in the face of big corporate farming?
Sure. Well, there's so many pieces of this puzzle.
Yeah.
And part of what I am doing is wrapping my head around the one part that I think I really understand. And that came from all the years at the farmers market, built on my background of working in restaurants, where I was involved in ordering and sourcing from local farms. So I got to see both sides of that equation and got a pretty good sense of what does demand and supply look like? What is the marketplace for local agricultural goods, and how do we change that? What can we do to shift that? And the work that I'm doing now, a lot of it has to do with validating my ideas and beliefs about what the pain points are in that process. And what I mean by that is, if we were going to, you know, draw a diagram and say, hey, this person has this idea, I want lettuce. And then they do, what are the 6, 10, 12 steps to get that lettuce from a local source or a non-local source? What do those look like? And what are the places during that journey that are awkward, uncomfortable, tricky, where they might stop that process and change to not buy it from a local person? So what are the ways in which that happens?
What are they?
Well, there's a lot of different ones. And this is, you know, we're actually in the middle of doing what we call the customer journey work right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with some wonderful people to do that. There's a organization, a firm in Seattle called the Experience Group, and the woman Celeste Combs is one of our advisors on our advisory board. And she has been doing that work for, I think, 20 plus years, and is just bringing an amazing array of experience to this process. And but for example, I have been collecting a lot of stories of people's experiences. And one of the stories that I've heard over and over is the story of someone having this dream, this desire to cook a dish, to put on an event, to make food for their family of a certain kind,
mm-hmm.
and then valuing local and deciding they want that for flavor, personal values, all these different reasons, and going to get those ingredients, and it taking many stops, going to the farmer's market, not everything was there. They stop by a farm stand, not everything's there. They go to another farm stand, and they managed to get 2/3 of what they were hoping to get, and they couldn't get something they thought would be easy because it was sold out. And yes, that is the most common frustration story I've heard from the end user, from the consumer, from the average shoppers at the farmer's market that I've been talking to. And so that boils down to a problem of being able to have access to good information. And that's the nugget that I'm working on, is how do we create better access to information? And once we start thinking about that, then we can start looking at, well, that means we need to get information from farmers and we need to make it accessible to people. Mm-hmm. And once we assume we can kind of crack that nut, then who else could benefit from that information? And restaurant owners would really benefit from that information. That's a definite
interest.
Yeah,
that's a question I had, is how many, if you have a sense of this, how many of our island restaurants are currently accessing or sourcing local foods? And how many do you think would jump on that bandwagon if they had better information?
Many of them are. Obviously, restaurants of a certain kind are more likely to. You know, I'm quite fond of our local Subway, especially once they added gluten-free breads to their menu. But their system doesn't include as much of that, if any. I don't know exactly. But places like the Hardware Store and Gravy and Bramble House are very much interested in already doing some of that.
Well, and they're independent, whereas Subway is a chain.
Exactly. And so a big part of what we're in the research that I'm doing is looking at the independent groceries. And there's an independent grocery association that I've been getting data from as far as how many those are in the nation and in Washington State and in Seattle and figuring out what that looks like. I've talked to all of those chefs. And one of the storylines that I've heard is that at the moment, it's challenging to source local because the marketplace relies on a one-to-one relationship. So if you want to get something, you have to call a farmer and find out if they have it. And if they don't have to, you've got to call another farmer. And maybe you call them and they don't answer the phone. You have to wait for them to call you back. And that whole process ends up being incredibly time intensive, especially if you're trying to place orders every single week or every other week.
Or every single day.
Well, every single day. I mean, most restaurants work on some sort of weekly order schedule.
They do. Okay.
Or 2 week order schedule or something like that. And so when I mentioned the idea of being able to offer them access to information, he said, what are you looking for? It's like, oh, well, I need celery, carrots, tomatoes, beets, whatever. You know, it's like, oh, well, what if you could just find out who had those? And what if you could, if you wanted to price shop, if that's important to you, what if you could know what the price differences were for the three farms on the island that had those? And their eyes light up. I mean, it's just amazing the time savings and the interest they would have. And all of the chefs that I've talked to have expressed frustration with the current system and a desire to possibly be more involved with purchasing local, but they can't afford the manpower. It's not the cost of necessarily the produce. They're willing to maybe value that, but they can't afford the manpower to do all that effort and all those steps to get it.
Would there be a way also, I hear you talk about this in the one-to-one relationship, et cetera, would there be a way also to use technology to create ongoing relationships between restaurants and farms so that a restaurant, for instance, could share their menu with a given farmer who is then going to work at helping them to...
So one of the really exciting features that we're looking at, and for lack of a better term, I'm thinking of it as like a futures market for food, agri-local food, is the ability for restaurants to put out future potential orders.
Ah.
So say a restaurant's like, wow, I always go through X number of cases of tomatoes every summer, and I'd be really interested in sourcing those tomatoes local next summer, but I'm going to put that out now so that farmers could plan on that. And it would take headache off me in the middle of my busy season to know where I'm sourcing those from. And it takes the risk off the farmer for growing more without knowing where those are going. One of the challenges now is that a place like the farmer's market is what I think of as a fairly inflexible marketplace because the arc of demand does go up and down, but it doesn't necessarily go up and down based on what the individual farmers have or need, right? So if a certain farm comes to the market and is selling a certain volume every week and they have an extra large harvest 1 week and they show up, maybe even with a high quality product, they will take some of that product home. The market doesn't have a sudden ability to shift or change its consumption of those products. And so that is one of the stories that I saw over and over again at the farmer's market. And what it creates is this incentive to grow the right amount for farmers, not as much as they can. And taking a sidestep back to what I said in the very beginning, I want us to increase local production of agriculture. I want these farmers to have a reason and a purpose and an incentive to grow as much as they can. I want that to be the storyline that we're working with. And yet, for many reasons, often they are growing not the most that their land can grow. They are growing, one issue obviously is labor, and another issue is what they think they can sell.
So increasing demand, and there's always that
it's a chicken and an egg.
Yeah, right. Which comes first?
But one of the things that was really clear is that there's actually unmet demand right now. And that's what I'm trying to help farmers connect with. That there are chefs and individuals who would buy more at the moment. It's just inconvenient enough that they don't.
Ah, inconvenient and not necessarily there. You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. I'm here with Caleb Johns talking about local farms, local farmers, local restaurants, how we can get everybody together. And we can do this thanks to the generosity of Windermere Real Estate. They support all our community information programming, and they make our emergency alert service possible. Caleb, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned independent grocers while we were talking about independent restaurants. What is the potential for local farmers to be supplying to independent grocers, and what kind of competition are they going to get from chain grocers and from corporate farms?
I do not have a background in the grocery world, so I'm just beginning to understand this. And there are long-standing business relationships and even some contracts at some places. But what I do see is there is a growing demand from the end user, from the end consumer, to be able to purchase products that are local, even hyper-local, from their neighborhood, from their friends, from their farmers, through their grocery stores. And independent grocery stores are starting to shift their patterns and starting to figure out how they can source some local products and put it on their shelves because they realize that's what people want. And as they begin to do that, they run into the same challenges that the chefs run into, is that it is currently very time-consuming process to do that. And so with only a few conversations in that world under my belt, I think that should there be an easier tool to source those local products, find out who has how much of what and to get it in the pipeline to be delivered, to be picked up, to be however they want to do that. I think that there is a great potential to have the independent grocers become more involved in the local agricultural economy. And I think that could be a win-win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so what you're trying to do with Farmify is to bring all these people together and use good information and good technology to help everybody get what they need out of the process, and all ships rise with this. I wonder, too, I know I've spoken with island farmers who lament the fact that it is so costly to grow good organic food, in part because they don't get subsidies from the government like large farmers do. Are you aware of any legislation or any potential for small farms to be subsidized by the government?
There is no legislation of that nature currently in present. I am very curious, as I think many in the agriculture world are, to find out how the shape of the current farm bill. It's a five-year omnibus bill that goes through and has a lot of impact on the agriculture world, and that's in process. So we're kind of all waiting to see what the current political situation does to that bill. There is, I think, going to have to be a fairly more significant noise from voters, from consumers, with their voting with their pocketbooks and voting with their votes, before we see legislation, definitely at the federal level, that can go against the large-scale agriculture interests. That's going to be a bit of a shift. What we do see is more locally. We see, for instance, King County did their kitchen cabinet advisory group. And I'm going to get the number of years wrong. It was a few years ago. Leslie Mackey, one of our islanders, was part of that, which was a question of how King County could be supportive of local agriculture. And out of that, I believe they ended up with a very long list of things that they could do, but they chose they prioritized, I think it was 10 bullet points that the county ended up voting into, and I forget the exact language, but basically it's acts that they were going to attempt to follow. And so it has to do with increasing the amount of acreage in agricultural production within King County and increasing the support of the local agricultural system in different ways. So there's some really interesting work that is going into policy at the local level. And I think that that is because of the interest and awareness that you see driven from communities and small areas as people really speak up to how they want their food to be sourced. And they want transparency and where it comes from. And they want to know that it's not traveling as far and they want to get access to that. So that's, I think, where it's going to begin. And it'll go from there. I would love to see subsidies for small-scale farmers down the road. I think that's a bit of a fight, but hopefully.
Well, in the current political climate, that could be a bigger fight. But I find myself wondering, too, I'm glad to hear you saying that local consumers are saying they want their food sourced locally more frequently. Mm-hmm. But the government subsidies make it a lot more affordable to buy food from far away.
Price is always going to be a deciding factor in any marketplace. And this is one of the challenges. One of the things that I'm hoping to address with the way that I'm developing this is to really figure out how to connect farmers and consumers to each other with the least additional costs, right? And so part of, we were talking just a few days ago, I got to come on and we had a little blurb about this, which was fun. And we were talking about how, you know, this has potential to be much larger than Vashon.
Yes.
And that is purposeful in the fact that developing software always has kind of a fixed cost to do it well. And it's a significant cost. But if we start spreading that cost far enough and wide enough, then it becomes almost insignificant to each individual consumer and each individual farmer. So a lot of what I'm looking about is what is the scale that we have to operate at to really drive the costs of the platform down to the point where it can be the cheapest other option. It can be the cheapest possible way to connect people. You know, for instance, right now, if a farmer is selling at the farmer's market, there are costs associated with that.
Right.
There are costs to be at the market. There is the time that they are spending there, which is potentially the biggest cost of, you know, an entire day there rather than working on the farm. And so you start to add up those costs and you start to think, oh, well, that's kind of significant. And so even though they're getting, you know, quote unquote, full price at the farmer's market, they're also paying to get to that.
Right.
And so if there was a way in which they could receive orders and fulfill orders that were at that same price point that they could choose, it's up to them, that didn't require them to spend an entire day or pay a farmer's market stall fee and those kind of things. That
or at least be able to sell all week long in addition to
exactly
farmer's market.
Then all the time and whatever. So the idea is to figure out a way to provide them an additional revenue stream, an additional revenue stream that can increase their ability to support themselves and also meet the demand and need and desire of consumers, both individuals and small businesses that are looking to engage with them.
Yeah, I'm aware that there are a number of farmers on the island who don't participate in the farmer's market because of how much it increases their overhead. So what you're looking at could conceivably reduce overhead and maybe add more population to the farmer's market simply because it then becomes less of a hit, if you will, in their overall
production and
costs.
So, you know, the cost of a product is such a delicate issue and such an interesting issue. You know, I know not about any individual farm, but if you just go to kind of some economics and some market studies, you know, I know that if a business entity is able to increase their return on investments, they can lower their price.
Right.
Or become more sustainable. You know, they don't need to lower their price if they're going out of business. If what that keeps them, if first off of what it allows them to do is continue to do what they're doing, that's great. But if there's also market pressure to lower their price, they're more likely to be able to do that if they're able to get more from what they're doing. And so, you know, if every farmer could grow a little bit more or know that they could sell all of what they grow of mm-hmm. every product, mm-hmm. you know, and these are, you know, these are not real world. These are, we're talking about theoretical at this point. These all have to go through right. the real world mill. But some of those are shaping my decisions and shaping the conversations that I'm having to figure out what the product is that we could create.
A lot of factors have to go into this. How long have you been researching this? And I want folks to know that you're listening to Real Talk with Caleb Johns, founder and CEO of Farmify, a new Vashon Island company that could conceivably go national. So how long have you been researching this? And how much help have you had?
Yes, a good question. I have been very interested in the marketplace for agricultural goods since I got the job at the farmer's market. So that was years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, I was a market manager for 4 years. And during that time, I was very interested in what drives business and how do we change it and what shifts it and how does that fluctuate and what it matters. And during my time at the farmer's market, I was eventually over years able to shift that. And we were, I think in the last year, we were able to drive 20 plus increase to the gross sales for that year, which was just amazing. And a large part of that was agricultural sales. And so I've been thinking about that, but this specific idea, I've been working on for about a year, about last Thanksgiving, a little before last Thanksgiving is when these kind of different pieces came together for the first time for me. I took the idea to, a little startup weekend in Seattle in February. And I pitched it to a group of 160 people I had never met before and was lucky enough to have my idea get the most votes in the room, which was awesome.
That's and pretty impressive.
That was kind of the one of the first stamps of, wow, maybe I've got a good idea here. Maybe there's something here. And I got to work on it with an amazing group of 8 people for a crazy 3 days. And that was kind of the first kind of real getting the momentum going. And then I worked on it part-time for a lot of this year. And then after my time at the art center was done, middle of the summer, took a long look at this project and decided that there was some real potential if I could dedicate more time to it, and decided to take that leap of faith and to see what I could make out of it. So I've been working on it full-time for a few months now.
So what do you know about the competition? Who else is doing this?
Anybody? It's really fascinating. There's in this very specific niche of supporting the direct to consumer market for agricultural goods at the small scale level, there's, I think every idea has its moment and kind of genesis happens in multiple places at once. There are no major players. There are a number of startups. There's one out of Spokane. There's one out of Bend, Oregon. There's one that's in Seattle that was doing something different that has recently pivoted to something more similar to what I'm doing. So there's definitely some competition out there. And I think that is for the better. I think it'll drive success in and among the different businesses that are trying to achieve this.
So in the last couple minutes that mm-hmm. we have, what's your timeline on making Farmify fully active?
Yeah. Well, I have so many things I want to do. And a big part of creating a project like this is to get really clear on what the key components are. And we're in that process of defining our minimum viable product right now. And we should have that done in the next few weeks, I hope. And then the process of doing the blueprinting out and mapping it out and then actually building it will commence. The goal is to have our beta version, trial version that has the minimum basic features, functional, fully operational by next spring, with hope that we can get some user feedback in Greater King County, hopefully in a few other places, possibly around the nation. We're looking at making other connections to make that happen.
Thank you, Caleb Johns, for being with us. You've been listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM. In the meantime, people can check out the progress of Farmify at farmify.co, correct?
That's correct. Please take a look.
Thank you for listening to Real Talk. We are here every Tuesday at noon, Friday at 6 p.m. Looking for answers to questions large and small. Next Tuesday, we're going to learn about the history of food and culture with Linda Nygaard. Thanks to our theme music composer, Luke McQuillan. I'm Susan McCabe. Thanks for listening.